because Saladin rather than Richard ruled the sacred city. That meant that Jews could stay there, that Jerusalem would not revert back to the rules of the Crusader Kingdom, a fact that would have real import for Jewish history. Expulsion would come in the 13th century for the Jews of England, but not for the Jews of Jerusalem. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 135, The Remnant of the Battle of Arsuf. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Beginning in 1189, in events connected to the coronation of Richard the Lionheart, and continuing in 1190 with the launch of the Third Crusade, anti-Semites in England horrifically assaulted Jews throughout the country, in London and York and Norwich. The medieval chronicler Ralph de Diceto informs us of what occurred, as libels against the Jews were joined with the fervor of the Crusades. Quote, "Many of those who were hastening to Jerusalem determined first to rise against the Jews before they invaded the Saracens. Accordingly, on 6th February, all the Jews who were found in their own houses at Norwich were butchered. Some had taken refuge in the castle." End quote. Centuries later, England came face to face with its past, quite literally. As I described in commentary, in 2004, construction workers building a shopping mall in Norwich uncovered a skull out of the earth. This turned out to be part of a mass grave, 17 skeletons in all, that lay at the bottom of what was once a medieval well. The skeletons were the remains of bodies that seemed to have been dumped into the well, many head first. And some months ago, scientists announced the confirmation of what was suspected, that these are the remains of murdered Jews. Thus, the discovery of victims of violence deep in the earth of England, and the recent confirmation of the Jewish identity of these victims, reminds us of part of the story of the Third Crusade, even as the destruction of Jewish communities in Germany is very much a part of the First Crusade. And as articles about this subject note, the violence in England itself was a portent of what was yet to come. For in 1290, all Jews were expelled from the country. But the presence of the Jews in Jerusalem would be allowed to remain because of the outcome of the Third Crusade, a remnant of which has only recently been discovered. Almost immediately following the conquest of Jerusalem by Saladin, Richard of England and Philip of France launched the Third Crusade, sailing for the Holy Land. Arriving in 1191, Richard conquered the city of Akko and from there headed south along the coast. We know that his most significant victory against Saladin, one which earned him significant fame, was in a battle north of Jaffa that caused great panic about the future of Jerusalem among Saladin's forces and ministers, and allowed Richard to proceed to conquer Jaffa itself. Yet it is also a striking feature of the length of Holy Land history that while we know this battle took place somewhere between Akko and Jaffa, at a location called Arsuf, for many years, no one had any idea where that actual battle took place, until recently. As an article on the Smithsonian website reported, it was an archaeologist in Israel who devoted himself to discovering the battle site, ultimately conclusively claiming that the site had been rediscovered. Quote, "Historians have long known that the September battle took place in a coastal plain north of what is now Tel Aviv, near a medieval settlement known as Apollonia or Arsuf. Richard's crusaders had conquered the port of Akko and were marching south to Muslim-held Jaffa when they met Saladin's men, inflicting heavy losses while sustaining few casualties of their own. The win allowed the crusaders to take control of Jaffa, but failed to deliver a fatal blow to the Muslim forces." And he adds, "Raphael Lewis, an archaeologist at the University of Haifa, used historical records and archaeological finds to identify the battle's long-lost location, Sharon Plain, an open field northeast of the ruins of Arsuf. His findings appear in the latest issue of Tel Aviv University's Sonia and the Marco Nadler Institute of Archaeology's monographic series," end quote. As the articles about the battle and histories such as Simon Montefiore's describe, the battle was one in which one night began a charge at Saladin's forces, followed by Richard and his army, which totally destroyed the army of Saladin, which retreated to focus on the defense of Jerusalem. But where did this Battle of Arsuf occur? Fox, on the Smithsonian website, drawing on reports in Israeli papers, further informs us that, quote, "To figure out where the action occurred, Lewis scoured medieval texts, maps, and aerial photographs in hopes of imagining what the landscape might have looked like to combatants. Per the post, he also analyzed hours of available daylight, the angle of the sun, and local weather conditions at the time of the battle. Everything Lewis considered converged on Sharon Plain. A preliminary archaeological survey appears to corroborate the proposed location," reports Haaretz, "unearthing medieval artifacts, including arrowheads, a horseshoe nail, and a fragment of iron that could have been armor. Ultimately, I believe that one of the reasons why the Battle happened in the particular spot I identified, is because Saladin did not believe that Richard was marching towards Jaffa, but that at that point he and his troops were going to turn inland in the direction of Jerusalem, Lewis tells the Post. In other words, the archaeologist speculates that Saladin only risked a head-on battle with the Crusaders because he thought they were about to turn toward Jerusalem, which incidentally they had no intention of doing. Adrian Boss, an archaeologist at Haifa University who was not involved in the research, tells Haaretz that the study gives us a fairly sound idea of where the battle took place. He adds, "It's probably as close we're ever going to get," end quote. What unfolded after the Battle of Arsuf was a series of battles, as well as negotiations between Richard and Saladin over the next many months. In the summer of 1192, Saladin, learning that Richard was engaged with the actions of his brother, who had been left back in England, seized the moment. As Montefiore tells us, describing the assault of Saladin and his mangonels, or catapults, quote, "Encouraged by Richard's problems, on 28 July, Saladin sprang a surprise attack on Jaffa, which he swiftly captured after a bombardment by his mangonels. While Ibn Shaddad was negotiating the surrender, his son Zahir fell asleep on watch. Suddenly, Richard the Lionheart appeared offshore in a scarlet-flagged galley. He had arrived just in time. Some Franks were still holding out," end quote. Richard's control of Jaffa was restored, but finally realizing that he would not conquer Jerusalem and could not stay to besiege it, he fleshed out with Saladin what became the Treaty of Jaffa, in which Saladin would retain the rulership of Jerusalem, but in which Christians would have territory of their own surrounding Akko, and Christian pilgrims would have the ability to visit sites sacred to them in Jerusalem. The Smithsonian article cites Mark Cartwright, who tells us in the Ancient History Encyclopedia that, quote, "no crusader army would ever get as close to Jerusalem again," end quote. And of course, as many also note, because Saladin rather than Richard ruled the sacred city, that meant that Jews could stay there, that Jerusalem would not revert back to the rules of the Crusader kingdom, a fact that would have real import for Jewish history. Expulsion would come in the 13th century for the Jews of England, but not for the Jews of Jerusalem. Richard the Lionheart appears as a young man, played by Anthony Hopkins, in the famous film A Lion in Winter. And there, Catherine Hepburn, playing Richard's mother, Eleanor of Aquitaine, speaks anachronistically about war, clearly intended for the script to reference the many violent battles and assaults in which Richard was and would be involved. In the movie, when Richard says about someone he's got a knife, Eleanor, or Catherine Hepburn, says, quote, "We all have knives. It's 1183 and we're barbarians. How clear we make it. Oh, my piglets, we are the origins of war. Not history's forces, not the times, nor justice, nor the lack of it, nor causes, nor religions, nor ideas, nor kinds of government, nor any other thing. We are the killers. We breed wars," end quote. Of course, this is just a movie script, but pondering the violence of these battles and the fact of a remnant of the war between Saladin and Richard being found hundreds and hundreds of years later in a Jewish state of Israel, I thought of a very different discussion, a Jewish one, that is also about a lion in winter. In a chapter describing the physical feats of the warriors of King David, the book of Samuel tells of David's loyal soldier, Benayahu ben Yehoyada, that hui ka tari b'toch habor b'yom ha-sheleg, that Benayahu was able to wrestle a lion on a snowy day, in other words, a lion in winter. The simple meaning of the text seems to be that even on a very cold day, this man, Benayahu, did not falter and emerge victorious in his battle against the beast. But the sages, in a homiletical way, interpreted the sentence symbolically as a reference to an activity other than physical. The verse, they wrote, describes how during the winter when it was cold, windy, difficult to concentrate, Benayahu was able to learn the most incredibly complicated of laws, the laws of the temple, known as Sifra Deberav. Now, on the face of it, this seems somewhat of a surprising interpretation of the verse because the book of Samuel says nothing about studying the laws of temple in winter. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik once applied this homiletical statement of the rabbis as a reference to the extraordinary emunah, the profound faith of the Jewish people, as reflected in the rabbis themselves, that during even the winter of Jewish exile, during the coldest and most frigid moments of Jewish history, when to many the notion that the Jewish people would one day return to the Holy Land and Jerusalem might have seemed fantasy, nevertheless, Jews still continued to learn about the laws of Jerusalem and the temple and continued to long for the land of Israel, envisioning an age when all the laws of the Holy Land would one day be observed again. In other words, the Midrash, the homiletical interpretation of a verse describing a physical feat in the snow, can itself be read as a Midrash about Jewish faith warming the heart and the soul of the Jew in the most frigid moments of Jewish history, sustaining Jewish faith in the ultimate return. It is therefore striking to ponder the fact that almost a millennium after it occurred, the remnants of the battle between Saladin and Richard were rediscovered by an Israeli archaeologist in a Jewish state whose capital is a Jewish Jerusalem. It is another entrancing facet of an entrancing history of an entrancing land and of a people whose story is nothing short of miraculous. This is Mayor Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.